The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Well, let's give credit to America's team for showing the rest of the NFL the path forward. Last night, just before the Monday Night Football game against the Cardinals, the Dallas Cowboys walked out on the center field, knelt in prayer, and then stood up and respectfully listened to the national anthem. What the Dallas Cowboys did last night is a microcosm for the entire country and what we should all be doing. As a team, they came together. They all stood up for what they believed in. They included prayer, and they did it respectfully. They took a knee, and they honored the national anthem, and they even threw in a prayer. You can disagree with what they're protesting, but you can't say a word about how they did it because it was not disrespectful in any way. You know, when we're looking to the Dallas Cowboys for leadership, there is a dearth of leadership in this country. Can you think of any other political activism in this day and age that has ended with nonviolence and both sides feeling respected? Because I can't. It doesn't happen anymore. Once again, Texas comes riding in to make us feel good, to show us something positive, to show us how we should be behaving. I am a little surprised that it came from professional sports. However, I shouldn't be. Our professional athletes historically have just transcended their professions. It was in 1936, Jesse Owens won 4 gold medals, showing the master race that they weren't all that masterful. You know what I mean? 1980, the U.S. hockey team broke the myth of the Soviets being invincible. And they did it with style and they did it with class. In 2017, the Cowboys showed us that respecting one another is still possible, and they provided a path forward for the NFL. And what's more, our children's heroes, if they still look at these guys as heroes, demonstrated how a man behaves.
It's Tuesday, September 26th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Killed you to see that with the Cowboys, didn't it, Stu? Killed you. Just killed you.
What, that they won? Yeah. I mean, I was not happy about it, I'll tell you that.
No. I mean, you always don't like to see the Cowboys doing anything good.
It's hard to imagine anything born from Satan doing something good, but if that's what you believe.
I will tell you, isn't it amazing how this has been reported? The first story I read this morning was Jerry Jones knelt in solidarity with Kaepernick. And I'm like, Jerry, what? Not even possible. That's the first story I read on this today.
It doesn't really seem like what happened, did it?
No, it doesn't seem like that at all.
I think it was a respectful thing, but they stayed away from doing protest during the anthem, which I definitely prefer to kneeling during the anthem. I don't know that I need the kneel at all. You know, the locking arms and standing there, I was kind of happy with. A bunch of teams did that over the weekend.
Yeah.
I don't mind
if they go out and kneel. Some of them were praying.
And that was great.
Yeah. I thought that was great.
You like that?
Yeah, you can't do that anymore. God forbid you pray.
I don't think he does forbid that.
So they go out and they lock arms. Some of them are protesting. Some of them are praying. Good. Now, here's what I would like to see. End this.
Yes.
End this now.
Yes.
Let's go out on the high note. Isn't that, didn't we see enough now? I think we got it. I think we have it.
You know, you'll have it when then there's no more epidemic of violence from white police officers against black people. That's when you'll have it. Only then will we be able to stand together.
First of all, that's not what this is about anymore. This weekend was all about anti-Donald Trump. That's all this was. Making a stand against Donald Trump. And David French has a really good view, I think, on this. We're trying to get David French on to talk about his his article that he wrote on Google, the NFL and Donald Trump. It's a think piece. Going to make your head hurt, but it's a think piece. One of the things that Stu said yesterday that I had not put together is, you know, Donald Trump, he does not forget grudges. He holds a grudge and he never lets it go.
And by the way, that's him saying that. I mean, he's talked about that before in his books and how he has a very difficult time with that. Really, only until someone comes along and really praises him and gets on his side does that happen.
Correct. So he's not. So this is something coming from him. It's not a slight on him. It is what he says. Stu pointed something out, and let me just play audio cut number two of this. See if you remember. Yes.
Donald USFL. Trump and the USFL made plans to move to the fall.
If God wanted football in the spring, he wouldn't have created baseball.
Well, we had a good league, but I always said spring football will never work. It'll never be first class. And if you look at a building like this, it's 57th and 5th. It's the best location right next to Tiffany. And that's what I've been all about, doing the best.
Yes.
And spring football was not that. And I thought if we moved to the fall, we'd create tremendous problems for the NFL, and something would happen.
On October 17th, the USFL filed a $1 billion antitrust lawsuit against the NFL.
Do you see this as an attempt on their parts to maybe force a merger somewhere down the line?
That's all that Donald Trump and two or three of those immensely wealthy men have in mind.
So, and this is interesting because Trump filed a lawsuit, $1 billion, along with a couple of other owners, to try to get the NFL to basically force them to merge. They won the lawsuit and won $1. And because they won $1, the entire league had to shut down. So he had bought a team in the USFL. This is back in the 80s. This goes back 30 years. And it was one of his first real business failures. It was, and to this day, you could tell by, if you watch that documentary, which was an ESPN 30 for 30, you can tell he's still angry about it in 2014 when it was made.
He doesn't let those things go.
No, he doesn't. By his own admission, mm-hmm. He says this is one of the reasons that he's been so successful and so strong in business all mm-hmm. these years. He doesn't forget these things. He just keeps going. Still, do I think that the reason he's doing this with the NFL has a lot to do with the USFL thing? No. I mean, I think number one, I think he really does love the flag. He is a nationalist.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He loves the troops. I think that's number one.
Yeah.
Number two, he is saying something that a lot of us feel. Would I like an owner to be like, you know what? I'm sick of this. Just get out of here. Like, would I like that? I mean, there's a big part of me that would like that.
Yes.
So I think those are the main reasons he's doing it. But I don't know, 10, 20%. There's a part of him that has been trying to shut down and destroy the NFL for 30 years. And I think there is a chunk of that that makes him kind of like, it's an additional exclamation point on his attention on this particular matter. I think it gives him just a tad bit of joy, maybe in not the happiest time, a little extra joy that he's kicking the NFL when it's down.
So is it too much to ask that this is over now? I think the answer to that is yes. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. There's no common sense. There's not a chance this now goes away. Should it? Absolutely. But there are people that actually believe in something that is what Colin Kaepernick believes. And make no mistake, what Colin Kaepernick is saying is wildly different than, you know, there's some injustices. And we can all agree that, hey, if there's a bad cop, let's find the bad cops. There's no reason that any American, I don't care what color you are, no American should be afraid to answer the door if it's the cops. No American should fear the cops. The police should be there to protect and defend everyone, no matter what. Are there bad cops? Yeah, I'm sure there are. Because there's bad bakers and there's bad everything. So Yes, of course there's bad cops. Should we get them out? Yes, we should. That's what we all agree on, I think. But that is not what Colin Kaepernick and others, for instance, Black Lives Matter, as we learned after the cops were shot here in Dallas, talking to the people who are marching with Black Lives Matter in places like Dallas, they don't agree with Black Lives Matter. They just are trying. They're using Black Lives Matter because they say there's a problem in our neighborhood. There's a problem with the relationship in our neighborhood. And in Dallas, at least, as we talked to a few of the people who were marching in Black Lives Matter, they said, we're becoming afraid of our own grandchildren because culture is changing and we need help. I think that's true. However, this is not going to go away until we actually separate the legitimate arguments, the legitimate concerns. Culture is changing. There is a wound in America that has never really healed. It's never healed. We've never really, truly had reconciliation in this country. Abraham, I want you to think about this. What happens when a country goes to war like it did? Rwanda is a great example. Rwanda went to war. They killed half the population. Half the population killed the other half. It was incredible what happened. The war ended, and instead of putting the criminals behind bars, the new president said, what we have to do is we have to reconcile with one another. And so if you admit to your crime and you say where the bodies are buried, what you did to those victims, why you did it, and you ask the family for forgiveness. Think of this. If the family believes you and forgives you, you can go. The forgiveness rate was over 80%. I think that's astounding. But what's happened to that country? What happened to that country was it has had, I think, 8% GDP growth every year since the year 2000. It is stable and growing faster than anyone else in the African Union. It's a remarkable example on what can happen if you have reconciliation. What happened here in the United States? We went into Reconstruction. Abraham Lincoln was killed. And we all just said, basically, what Americans usually do, I'm fine. It's all good. Let's just move on. And we did not finish the job. When Martin Luther King was killed, we kind of did the same thing. We were like, okay, everybody can ride the bus, and we're not going to have segregation anymore. But we never got back together as people and slapped each other on the back and said, hey, I'm sorry for the things that I was doing. I mean, in this lifetime, you know, I'm sorry for the things that I was saying and doing, and I forgive you. And having just a national dialogue, there was no coming back together. We all just kind of buried it and moved on and just went, okay, it's all fine now. So I don't think we ever really healed as a country should. The reason why we can't do that now is because everybody wants something. Because now it's not just about, hey, can we just get together as reasonable human beings? Now everybody's at a negotiating table. Now everybody wants, I want this, or you're going to give me that. And that's not what reconciliation is about. So I don't think we can ever come together, but we have to. We have to. And we have to dismiss the people on the extremes of each side that say there is no problem or it's all bad, because both of those are a lie. There is a new white privilege checklist that is going out for schools in San Diego State University. A chance for you to earn extra credit by rating your level of white privilege. 20 questions to see how privileged you are. Okay. I can arrange to be in the company of people of my race most of the time.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. I can do that. I can do that. I can go to an area that's predominantly one color, just like everyone else in the world.
I can go shopping alone or most of the time, pretty well assured that I will not be followed or harassed. No, I can't do that. I can't ever do that.
It's usually one of us throwing something at
right.
You.
I can turn on the television or open the front page of a paper and see people of my race or my race widely represented. You know, that's not good. White privilege, and that's not good. That just is.
It's not good or bad, right? That's the whole point.
Let me ask you this. Is there such a thing as black privilege?
Right.
Because I can go to Africa, or I can go and I can go to an Arab country, and I'm not going to see a bunch of white people.
Ask the NFL players as they kneel on the field with 70% of their own race. Do they, is that okay? Is that black privilege there? I thought that's what they were protesting. It was white privilege.
We're going to go into this a little bit more, probably on tomorrow's program, because it's a discussion that we have to have, a discussion that we have to have on saying, you know, let's have some perspective here, because that is, in my opinion, what is missing from America today. Not opinions. We have enough opinion. Perspective. An opinion says, see, and I'm right. Perspective says, hang on just a second. Has anybody thought about looking at it from this angle? You come home and you've lost about $2,500 worth of stuff. But more importantly, when you open up the door, you see that somebody has gone through all of your stuff. They've broken into your house. How long does it take for you to feel safe in your house? Simply Safe Home Security protects every door and every window in your home. You're going to get motion sensors, entry sensors. Simply Safe system is completely wireless, so you can set it up for yourself without drilling holes in your wall. I have a friend who said on a prompting, they got into their car with their family, and they were at some thing, and they were going to go home and just play a game. And on a prompting, halfway home, they felt, you got to go back. You got to go back to where you were and say something. And it was so strong. And they were like, that's the dumbest thing. But it was so strong. He said to his wife, I have to go back and say something to those people. She's like, you can just call them. He's like, no, I have to go right now. I just feel it so strongly. He drives back, takes him about 45 minutes to go back and then get back home. By the time they get home, somebody had just left their house. If he hadn't have gone back, he would have walked in on a burglary, and God only knows what would have happened. You can have the promptings, or you can have Simply Safe also alert you and alert police. Around-the-clock monitoring, $15 a month, no contracts. Simply Safe, you'll make sure your home and your things are protected, and your family. SimplySafeBeck.com. Get a special 10% discount when you order today at SimplySafeBeck.com. Now, if you want the system tonight for some reason, you can go to Best Buy and have your home protected by tonight. There's no drilling or anything. You can install it, and it's all happening at Best Buy. Or you can get that extra 10% off by going to SimplySafeBeck.com. That's SimplySafeBeck.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Jason Betrill is with us now. He's our chief researcher, military advisor, and writer on the Glenn Beck program. And I wanted to bring you in. North Korea, things are really weird with North Korea. The president went against the advice of his own advisors and called him, what do you call it, Rocket Man at the UN, which I thought was unnecessary. But he had harsh rhetoric. He said, if provocations continue, we'll have no choice but totally destroy North Korea. If we're forced to defend ourselves or its allies, we will completely destroy it. Then we flew our B-2 bombers in international waters. The North Korea now says this is an act of war.
The rhetoric concerns me.
It does, because the only thing that's going to really push this over to where we actually do engage in war is a mistake. And the rhetoric that's going on right now is pushing both sides closer and closer towards making one of those mistakes.
If they shot down one of our bombers, it is an act of war, but we have behaved differently in the past, have we not?
We have. The Soviets have done it in the past. We did not go to war. We do not have to go to war over that. We would be justified, but...
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Anthony Weiner is going to be breaking rocks. He just got 2 years in prison for being Anthony Weiner and doing what Anthony Weiner was doing with 15-year-old girls online. I think he could have gotten 10 years. I think he should have gotten more. We need to send a message to dirtbags that this is unacceptable. I can't even imagine as a dad how I would have felt if this guy would have been sending messages and asking my 15-year-old daughter to do the things that Anthony Weiner asked her to do, knowing that she was 15. You know, this isn't he stood in front of the judge and said, I had no idea. She sure looked 18 to me. No, she said, I'm 15. And he said, oh, the things I would like to do to you when you're 18, but why don't you just do them to yourself and let me watch? I mean, imagine as a dad how you'd feel. Yesterday he went to jail, but it wasn't too long ago when he was close to becoming the mayor of New York City. Until he had a pretty major meltdown, and Showtime was there to capture it. But here's one meltdown that he had while he was at MSNBC. He's running for the mayor of New York City, and he's on with Lawrence O'Donnell.
Where is Lawrence tonight?
He's in D.C. His voice will play in the earpiece, not in the studio.
Joining me now is Anthony Weiner. Thank you.
It's my pleasure, Lawrence. How are you?
For me, it just comes down to this, which is, what is wrong with you?
I don't understand the question. What is wrong with me that I care so much about the issues that I fight for every day, that I have my entire career?
No.
Are you saying that because I have things in my personal life that are embarrassing, I shouldn't run for office? Okay, that's a fair position to have. Some people have it. Well, you're not being clear, Lawrence, so let's work a little harder at that.
It does not seem to be a fully healthy pursuit.
I know there are a lot of people who talk about
the totality of your life, Anthony, do you think you've spent your time well?
First of all, that's not...
That's so awkward.
This is from this video
Anthony,
from Showtime called Weiner.
There is something wrong.
I know you
with
just
you,
said that. You just
I'm
said
looking,
that. Repeating it doesn't make it any more interesting.
I'm looking at your life. I'm looking
well,
at your relentless pursuit. You are relentless about certain things.
That's not true.
What I'm trying to get at, Anthony, is what drives you.
Okay,
and
in that case, ask me that question. You don't like things that you know about me. You want to make fun of me on television. Join the club. Frankly, bigger guys than you have been trying to knock me down.
I mean it from a psychiatric level.
Dude,
I don't care.
I don't really need your psychiatric
answers.
Questions. All you can focus on is what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? That's not it. It's the debate either.
As it turns out...
I don't plan on losing. Maybe I'll come on this show and kick your ass every night, like I'm doing tonight.
You'll get the last word.
Thank
you.
Good night, Lawrence.
Oh God, that's so awkward.
Okay, so here's the reason why we're playing this. Lawrence O'Donnell was right. There is something deeply disturbing about Anthony Weiner, and I don't think we've seen the end of the Anthony Weiner story. I don't think he changes in jail, quite honestly. I really don't. But, hey, maybe he does. Maybe he has this moment. But is he allowed to have electronics? Is he allowed to have a phone? Is he allowed to have the internet in prison? Let's see how this works out for him. we wanted to bring Kitty in because as we were talking about this yesterday, Kitty Higgins is the booker of our show and been with me. How long, Kitty?
Just over a year now.
Just over a year. She came from NBC. You actually were the one who booked that interview.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So it was my first job right out of college. I was an NBC page and I was on assignment with The Last Word with Lawrence O'Donnell. Mm-hmm. We booked him for that day and none of the producers knew what Lawrence was going to ask. So Lawrence was keeping it as a mystery block. It mm-hmm. was the last interview that Wiener was going to do before the polls opened for the mayoral race. And we booked him. I'm waiting for him to arrive. My supervisor is getting nervous and I had to lie to his assistant to get him there on time. I could tell that it wasn't going to go well. So I said it was going to be a block earlier. And so by the time that Wiener came in, he was sweating and because he had been running through New York to get to 30 Rock. We're in the elevator and my supervisor's in the elevator with me. And he says, "I am so sorry I'm late." And my supervisor's like, "You're right on time."
Oops.
And so we run him into studio and I was actually standing in the studio when that was happening. So I couldn't hear what Lawrence was saying right away. And then I was thinking, this is too good. I run in the control room and everyone's just sitting there nervously because we had no idea where Lawrence was going that night. The interview ended and it was still a really heated talk. And so they actually extended the interview for about 15 more minutes.
So he, in this documentary, it shows Anthony Wiener kind of just laughing it off and having a good time and walking out feeling like the victor. That's what he's portraying here. Is
yes.
that the way it ended?
No. So I had to be the one that escorted him from studio to the elevator out. And in the elevator ride down, he started crying. And I was the only one with him. And I just said, "Thank you for coming on today." And he walked out.
What was your impression of him? I mean, Lawrence said, you know, what's wrong with you? Was your impression that there was something deeply wrong with him?
You know, I had never seen the documentary until last night.
Uh-huh.
But looking back on the whole mayoral race, it just seemed crazy that he would put himself and his wife and family through that over and over again with the press.
It's not crazy now looking back because he's so focused on himself and his own needs and what is going to stroke his ego or whatever else. And that's what he does.
But what the crazy thing about this documentary, and if you've never seen it, you need to see it.
It's
on Netflix and everything else. It's called Wiener.
Yeah.
And it is truly a car crash in slow motion. It is you know what's coming. You know this isn't healthy that he's got this going on. And then they cover him with the next sex scandal. And he never says, "Get out." He could say to the
cameras,
to the cameras, "Get the hell out." He doesn't. And it says to you, there's something deeply wrong with Anthony Wiener. So he left. What was the reaction of the rest of the staff?
I think the staff for Lawrence O'Donnell was just kind of shocked. I mean, we didn't even know what to expect for the segment. Lawrence wasn't even in New York. He was in the DC studio, which made it more awkward because you have a slight delay. And then Lawrence flew back to New York the next morning and he felt really bad about the interview. He had even debated about whether or not he should reach out to Anthony and apologize.
That's interesting because he came off as the obvious victor in that interview. And it seemed like that was his plan from the beginning to really go after him. I'm surprised to hear that he felt bad
about it.
Well, the interview blew up. It was a viral video. Mm-hmm. BuzzFeed over it.
Did he feel bad that he kind of set him up? I'll never book somebody and set them up. You know, you're walking into a hostile room, right? With me. Do you think with Lawrence, he felt bad maybe because he didn't tell him you're walking into a chainsaw?
I think he did feel bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So last week with Lawrence O'Donnell, there was something else that came out. There was this audio, and it came out because somebody in the other room was hammering while he was recording the show. And here's a little piece of what happened. Listen to that hammering. You're recording a TV show. He's quiet now because he's listening to a guest.
Is Donald Trump going to be called to testify to Congress? Michael Iskoff has the latest on that.
The hammering.
Stop the hammering. Stop the hammering out there. Who's got a hammer?
All right, so he goes off, and quite honestly, everybody is pounced on him. And I think I would have reacted the same way if somebody was hammering during my show. I'd be like, can we stop the hammering, please? But for some reason, this was leaked out. And as we said, that doesn't just come out. That is usually from somebody in the control room that doesn't like you. Was Lawrence O'Donnell, is Lawrence known as a crazy man, or was this just an outburst that was unusual for him?
He's definitely a colorful person, but he has a really good relationship with his staff, and they really love him. And I'd be really surprised if it came from one of the producers. How NBC is set up is that the editors are pretty separate from the producing team. So anyone of the NBC editors could have access to the raw footage, and that could have been leaked.
What would have happened to somebody if they leaked raw footage? Is NBC, do you think, doing an investigation on who did that?
I would think so. I mean, it doesn't look good for anyone over there.
Yeah. So you walked away liking Lawrence O'Donnell?
I did. I really liked working with his team.
Yeah. It kills me because I actually like him too. I just despise everything he says.
Well, sure,
everything he says. You know, the guy is he's an admitted socialist and not a, you know, not a happy socialist.
But yeah, right. But he's, well, I don't.
He's a happy socialist, but not in the. Hey, let's be Sweden. I don't think that's the.
Yeah, it's interesting because he is. You're right. He said he was a socialist.
He's a socialist,
and he has a pretty deep understanding of what that means.
Yes.
At the same time, he's really good friends with Penn Jillette, who is obviously. I mean, he's almost too libertarian for libertarians, and yet they're still really close and friendly. I mean, you know, Penn seems to make friends with very strange people like you as well. So, I mean, that's not necessarily. But it's kind of an interesting. He seems like an interesting guy, at least. And to be in the middle of both of those moments is.
We can still like each other, even though he'd be kneeling on the field and I would be standing on the field, at least in the last weekend. Thanks, Kitty.
By the way, that documentary is called Wiener. So you're allowed to search for Wiener on the internet and
be careful.
But just be careful when you're doing that. That's not necessarily always a good idea. However, that documentary is a good idea. It is crazy. You might think Anthony Wiener, that's an old story. Who cares?
It's a remarkable documentary. Yeah. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, because you go through the whole thing with him. And like, for example, there's a scene at the end when he's giving his concession speech after the mayoral race. In real life, in the news, it was reported that one of his flings was going to confront him outside of the speech. So you are with him as he walks through the next door McDonald's, through the kitchen, as he sneaks in through the back way to make the actual speech. The access they had was incredible.
Traveling can be a hassle. Flights, hotels, rental cars. It can be really overwhelming, but not with Upside.com. Upside is going to reward you with a gift card to places like Amazon.com every time you buy a business trip. And the treatment you get from Upside's customer service specialists, they're called navigators. Really fantastic. Recently, a navigator noticed an Upside user was booked in a middle seat, 3-hour flight. Navigator upgraded her to an aisle seat with a little more leg room. Upside, the navigators are instantly accessible 24/7 by voice, by chat, email, message on the Upside app. So if you're trying to do something and you're like, I don't know what I'm doing. Is this right? They will help you. They will even reach out if they're, because they'll monitor what you're looking for. And if they see that you're booking something and they think, I don't think this is right, they will jump in and chat with you and say, hey, are you meaning to do this? Go to Upside.com now. Use the promo code Beck. You're going to get a minimum $100 gift card to Amazon.com. That's promo code Beck. So here's why Upside is really good. You're going to save a buttload of money. You're going to be able to do your hotel and your airfare and everything else all together. That will save your company, really, hundreds and hundreds of dollars. Then you also will get a $100 gift card. So the company wins. You win. The hotel and the airlines win because you're now a customer of theirs. Upside. That's the upside. Everybody walks away a winner. You deserve a better business trip. Find yours now at upside.com. Minimum purchases required. See site for complete details.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
On the muddy banks of the river, Gabrielle Sanchez rattled off the previous jobs of the women she now works with. Teachers, doctors, a petroleum engineer. All of them showed up with degrees in their hands for a chance to work here. Because of hyperinflation, food shortages, the sanctions, Venezuela is in real trouble. They only had a few job openings at this place, but they did hire the petroleum engineer and a couple of the doctors and a teacher. Inflation is now running in excess of 700%. The currency is in a free fall. Food and medicine in Venezuela, almost impossible to get. But these new employees can make $50 to $100 a night on a good night just by selling not their mind or their talents, but their bodies now, 20 minutes at a time. On a good night, they will make $50. What matters most to us? Let's try to keep perspective.
Glenn Beck. Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
The giant. The giant is what the locals in Afghanistan used to call him. His platoon called him just Lieutenant V, sometimes just V. It was late at night on August 2011 that the Taliban ambushed his platoon, and it was a furious firefight. Three American soldiers were hit immediately in the bullet spray, and Lieutenant V, the giant, took the wounded men to a nearby school, carrying one of them on his back. A helicopter eventually rescued them all. For that, he was awarded the Bronze Star. Bronze Star with a V for valor. He says he'd rather not have it because one of the three wounded men died that night. He was a private, Jesse Dietrich. V still hasn't come to grips with the tragedy. Yet there would be two more tours in Afghanistan for V, this time as an Army Ranger. V has a really unusual background. He was born in Mississippi to Spanish parents. His dad was a Spanish naval officer. Later, his dad worked at NATO in Belgium, where V played football for the first time at an American high school. He was smart, he was athletic, and he was really big. He eventually went to West Point, and he made the football team as a walk-on. By his senior year, he was team captain. Then came Afghanistan, the Bronze Star. Then he fell in love, and he married the love of his life, Madeline. Although he hadn't played football in 5 years, he tried out for the Philadelphia Eagles in 2014, and he made the team, but he was cut before the season started. Then he made the Pittsburgh Steelers practice squad, and halfway through the season, he earned a starting spot. This summer, the Steelers gave him a four-year, $24 million contract extension. This is the man that much of America grew to love but not yet know. On Sunday, the 29-year-old, 6'8", 320-pound offensive lineman, V the Giant, Alejandro Villanueva. He was the only Pittsburgh Steeler player to step out of the tunnel for the national anthem. He stood there with his hand over his heart, and by doing so, he stepped into the hearts of millions of Americans who are just disgusted by the childish activism of so many NFL players. But here's the update on the story. Yesterday, he came out with a heartfelt apology. He apologized because he said it was not his intention to be seen and step out and make himself different than the rest of the team. He said he made his team and his coach look bad. But something drew him out of that tunnel. Something that most of us will never fully understand, because our lives have not been at stake for the country. You see, this player that was probably the icon of Sunday wasn't making a statement. He stood there with his hand over his heart because it was private and personal, because it was about a private. And when he saw that the press had captured that private moment, he humbly apologized, which is why we and his coach and his teammates respect him even more. Villanueva undoubtedly was standing there thinking back to Afghanistan and the loss of Private Dietrich. Villanueva has something that the rest of America is sorely missing. Honor, integrity, and real perspective.
It's Tuesday, September 26th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Burgess Owens, NFL Super Bowl champion, author of Liberalism, How to Turn Good Men into Whiners, Weenies, and Wimps, joins us now with some perspective on what's happening in the NFL. Burgess, how are you, sir?
Glenn, it's good talking with you again, you and Stu, for sure. Hello.
So, Burgess, tell us what you think of what is happening and how we should be handling this.
Well, you know, I first of all, I enjoyed that recap, and I was thinking as you were going through it, this is the American way. This is what America is made of, and it starts with one word that I grew up with back in the days of segregation, back when I was walking to school early to fold the flag and to hold it reverently and not let it touch the ground. It's called gratitude. What you just described was a young man who has struggled. He struggled through the process that he's gone through. He's gotten to a point where he can look back and say, I'm so glad to be here. And this is what's missing in the NFL today. And I'll say this, it's missing on purpose. It's missing because of policies that's given these young men that are now coming out of misery, making income, and having no perspective on the fact that they now are living in a country where they can make a difference because they don't have parents. They don't have dads. 70% of them don't have a dad who says, this is how you act, and this is how you respond, and this is how you respectfully give the ball back to the ref. This is how you stay humble. They don't have dads to do that the way I did, and it's on purpose.
So we
go ahead.
Burgess, yeah. I want to, because you said something right at the very beginning. You said, I respectfully folded the flag during segregation. As a guy who has the perspective of living when the country really was much worse than it was than it is today. And having that and then coming to grips with all of that and still finding love of country, how do you feel or how do you relate to the people who, you know, are making millions of dollars, you know, and want safe zones everywhere for their hurt feelings when they haven't necessarily gone through the things that you and people like Martin Luther King, et cetera, have gone through?
You know, you and I have talked about this, and I'd say down, it's really another word called history, understanding your history. You know, when there's a connection with a lineage of people who have gone through harder times you have, you look back and say, you know what, if they can do it, I can do it. Very powerful 9 words. That says it all. And I was able to grow up in an environment in which every single person that I knew, man, our goal was to win. I mean, you know, it didn't matter what the struggle was or the obstacle. Matter of fact, the higher the obstacle, the more as a people, we couldn't wait to win and prove to others and ourselves how good we were. We've lost that connection. And it's been when you tear down the family structure, when you all of a sudden have men thinking it's okay not to be a part of it, not to stand up and man up. We have women who don't expect them to stand up and man up, but instead look at the government. You are truly disconnecting with a great heritage that's really an American heritage. So what's happening now, I'm not surprised. We are now seeing what's been going on for the last 2 decades within the black community. They are now standing on the sideline, collectively making billions of dollars, and no one is thinking, how can we together make a difference in our community? How can we go back and mentor these kids, raise these kids, make sure they're free and excited about their future? Because once you become a socialist, you don't think that way. If you're making money, you think you're all that as an elitist, and you just can't see anybody's rising to the greatness that you have risen to. So we just have to get the right message out and talk about our history a little bit better.
Let me take you here. Yesterday, I said the president of the United States has to recognize that he's the president of the United States, and that requires restraint and leadership in everything that he does. And instead of talking about how great the country is and you know, the flag, and we respect it and stop disrespecting it and calling names and everything else, isn't there some responsibility for people on the other side of this issue to also say, instead of making it about the flag and just condemning others, how about we say, I don't need you to boycott the NFL. How about we take a Sunday, any Sunday, and we go find a veterans hospital or a veterans home, and we take our families out and we serve these guys? Because it's not about the flag. It is about the idea of America. And the idea is, we're great because we're good. And these guys gave us a chance to be good. So let's go serve. The same could be said with the players. Why is everybody just protesting instead of saying, look, there's a problem in our own community, and we as now influential men in our own community and men with means are going to go in, we're going to mentor, but we're also going to go in and try to work with the police, finding the good cops and the bad cops, and stand with the good cops and try to usher the bad cops out.
You know, Jane, Glenn, you sound like you believe in the Judeo-Christian values our country was built upon.
I'm one of the few now, I think.
Yeah, and to that point, there are many millions of Americans that are doing exactly what you just described, because we do believe in our Judeo-Christian values. We still believe in a God in heaven that's no respect of person, and that our true self-esteem is built on service. But we also have to understand that there's another side of this picture that's been fighting this for over a century, and it's Marxist, socialist, and atheist. And no, they don't believe in the way that we believe, and they're all about stealth. So what they will do is they will destroy a community, have them dependent on them, and then teach them how to hate the rest of the country that's doing exactly what you just mentioned a minute ago. So it is a fight that we're fighting. It's the soul of our country. It is not black and white. And you and I have had this discussion. It's about ideology. It's about the spirit that we're going to they're going to take our country in the future. And I have faith in American people, just like I have. And I look back over our great history. We've always stepped to the plate once we knew we were in a fight. We now know we're in a fight. And it's about not only the flag. That's just where we are now. It started off with God in the public square, and then it was about the family. And then it's about our history. Do we really teach our true history or not? So far, we've been losing all those battles. This is one we cannot afford to lose.
So, Burgess, Burgess, tell me the difference, because as a guy who grew up in the 60s, tell me the difference between being uncomfortable and being unsafe. We're now, people are asking for safe zones. You're not unsafe, unless you're in Berkeley. You're not unsafe. You're just uncomfortable. And it's okay to be uncomfortable. No one should be unsafe for what they believe, but there's a huge difference. Can you explain to a generation that maybe doesn't understand the difference between uncomfortability and safety?
There was something that that many of us grew up with in the locker room. When there's no pain, there's no gain. That's life. You know, life is truly about how do we overcome those obstacles we face, those disappointments, those betrayals, those pain, the pain that we go through as a part of life. How do we deal with it? Now, we were taught you man up. You get up and you go at it. And matter of fact, if you have fear, you run toward it as fast as you can. Unfortunately, we're not teaching our kids to do that. So the first time they come with all their education, all their great feelings, the first time they hit pain, they were ready to run the other direction. So some kind of way, again, and to me, this comes down to mentorship. It comes down to men stepping into stepping and doing their part. My goal within the black community is to get black conservative men to stand in, to mentor, to educate, to help these kids so they start having these decisions on whether they're going to quit or not, to tell them, hang in there, take one more step. As we give that message and we're there to kind of support the process, then we'll end up winning. But it's going to come down to heart, hand-to-hand. It's not talking this process through. We're going to have to really get in there and roll up our sleeves, do some heavy lifting. And so that comes down to being there in those communities to help these people to make it through it.
How can people help you?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm now just opening up a chapter. There's a group called One Heart Project that I think is going to one of the greatest things is helping young men and women come out of the correction center and have a place to go, have hope. And that's what our country is all about, a second chance. So we're just getting a chapter started in Salt Lake City. There's a chapter in Dallas. I think it's one of the greatest things we can do to help our men, our young boys and girls, to finally come through. And those are going to be the champions for us. Because once they get this and they get their second chance, you're going to find a stronger advocate than these young men and women that understand the American ways about second chances.
Next time you're in Dallas, come by and see me and let's explore how we can help you on that.
We will do that. All right, buddy.
Thanks a lot.
Good talking with you, Glenn.
Good talking to you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Burgess Owens is an NFL Super Bowl champion. Sadly, of course, he defeated the Philadelphia Eagles for that title, but that's a whole other story. He's the author of Liberalism.
That's why you didn't say anything.
I know. Well, Liberalism, or How to Turn Good Men into Whiners, Weenies, and Wimps, and you could probably call me one of those after that particular sell.
The Equifax breach could affect 143 million Americans, and so far the organization has determined that the credit card numbers for about 200,000 consumers, personal data, social security numbers, they're out and they're never coming back. Is your name part of that? Someone's identity is stolen every 2 seconds. This was a big theft. This is game changing in the identity circles. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity thefts, and if there is a problem, they have somebody that is here in the United States that is going to help restore it and fix it. Now, nobody can prevent all identity theft. Nobody can monitor all transactions at all businesses, yada, yada, yada. But LifeLock will help you see more of the threats to your identity and help you correct it, stop it, or turn it around better than anybody else. So go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK. Use the promo code Beck. You get 10% off of your LifeLock membership. That's LifeLock.com. Save 10% now. LifeLock.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
The woman who said Hobby Lobby cotton decoration last week is racist
has spoken out.
It doesn't represent a decoration to me. It represents a time of oppression for my people. I was not trying to be divisive. If I was trying to be divisive, I would have said something to the effect of talking about the world, talking about race relations, talking about an individual. I am a consumer talking to a retailer, and all I said was I found something offensive. If you really want the country to heal, then you need to be mindful of how you speak. Words have power. It's no longer about the raw cotton. The cotton is off the shelf and racism remains there. So I'm still going to be happy and I'm still going to make a change in the world.
Okay. Can we play that again? Just, I want to hear the first about 8 seconds. I want you to listen carefully what you said.
It doesn't represent a decoration to me. It represents a time of oppression for my people. I was not.
Do you notice what she said? This represents ... to me. Well, that can represent a lot of things to a lot of people. We don't have to project our feelings on other people. I would not have thought of, cotton as the, racist symbol that she does. I think most people wouldn't. In fact, a lot of cotton farmers around the world, are white. Cotton actually helped end slavery. Let me say that again. Cotton actually helped end slavery because the South said the world is so enslaved to American cotton that they're going to need it. And so we're going to go to Europe and we're going to say, you're not going to get any cotton unless you defend us. England and France said, nah, I don't think so. Cotton changed the world. Cotton helped end slavery. That's another way to look at it. It's her personal viewpoint. Okay, I can see how you see that. I don't agree with you, but you don't have a right to dictate to everyone else. And I think we really need to grow a little thicker skin. I think Frederick Douglass might have a problem with somebody comparing this cotton in a vase in Hobby Lobby with racism and oppression. I think he might have said, you know what, I'm going to let that one go. Maybe you should too.
I do have a problem with Hobby Lobby forcing her to buy it, though. I mean, it's her money. She should be able to walk into a store and purchase what she wants.
They didn't.
So she didn't actually purchase this
product. And in fact, did you hear what she went on to say? Hobby Lobby took this off the shelf.
Which is
absurd. So they were sensitive to what she was feeling. They decided that she was more important than what everybody else might feel. They took it off and she said, and yet the racism remains.
She's still pissed. You can't win.
Look, we have to understand, you're dealing with people who want to be angry, who want revenge. And this is on all sides of all the issues. Don't be one of those people.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Brad Meltzer, who I think met Glenn when they were trying to save Superman's house, which was successful, by the way.
Yes, it was.
It's a good story. You should tell that sometime. Brad is, of course, the number one New York Times bestselling author of Heroes for My Son, Heroes for My Daughters, House of Secrets, of course, well, among many others, of course, and also host of History Channel television show Brad Meltzer Decoded and Brad Meltzer's Lost History, which are both awesome. He's at bradmeltzer.com. And he has a couple new books out today. He joins us on the program.
Hey, Brad, I always like talking to you because you always bring something cool about history to the table. I wanted to ask you if you can you put us in a time frame from history? Do you see the West and where America is today as repeating any time in history from any country?
That's a really good question. I want to give you a thoughtful answer rather than a quick one. But for me, where I see us today, I see, you know, I was reading this morning, it was an incredible article about the context of looking at the civil rights movement and compared to today. And I'm not talking about picking which side's right at all. What I'm simply talking about, because I've been obsessed with protests lately, for obvious reasons, but is at the time of the March on Washington, and this is, I would have thought the exact opposite, that 60% of the people were against it. Only 20-something percent supported Dr. King or the march, thought it was a terrible idea. And it's only through history and looking backwards do we look, and I know, you know, your great heroes, my great heroes, too, the, you know, the heroes of the civil rights movement. But to look at that and realize how wrong we had it at that moment. Even 2 years later, you know, the numbers were only starting to change. It wasn't like some magical change that happened and a speech was given and glory was heard. It's an incredible thing. So to me, that's the context I'm looking at now, is that sometimes we're in the midst of history. We just have, you know, one side is going to be proven right here in the history books. And it's going to be fascinating to watch which
you
side
have,
it's going to be, because I,
do you have any inkling? Because it's so strange. You and I think so much alike, Brad. I was just pondering the same thing. Over the last 2 weeks of...
You have to be. You yeah. have to be, right? Because you're such a big fan. You and I both, you know, those civil rights icons are heroes to us. But at the time, you know, what I realized, especially with Gandhi and everything else, is that, and it said it in this article, I'm going to send it to you privately, you'll read it, is, but what it basically said is that any protest has to be unaccepted by the people. That's why it's a protest. And so it's always going to be a small minority that's doing it. It can't ever be. There's no protest that exists that goes, yeah, everyone's for it, because other, then it's not a protest. And I was like, wait, we have to take a moment and look to, and, you know, I always say to people on Twitter all the time, you may not agree with it. Obviously, you and I have great love for the American flag. We may not agree with it, but I will always support anyone's right to a peaceful protest, a peaceful one. And obviously, you know, there's arguments in there and there's things I really don't like that are going on right now, but it is an incredible, incredible world we live in right now.
So,
especially when you look at it in that historical context.
When you look at the greats, when you look at Martin Luther King, etc., you see that there was a great injustice going on. And he was pretty pure of heart on this. And the same thing could be said for Dietrich Bonhoeffer and other great leaders. You know, Colin Kaepernick is not necessarily that guy. And most people who are following don't really have any idea of what they are. They're protesting. It's weird because it's become almost like a hashtag where you don't really have to do anything. I mean, the great leaders actually went out. They actually suffered, and they taught people how to be decent human beings and what the struggle was really all about.
And listen, you couldn't have said it better. Think of it like this. I mean, listen, talk about the math. The one who inspired Dr. King is Gandhi. That's who inspired him. And the reason we adore Gandhi, the reason we adore Dr. King, is because of the teachings that they brought with them. You know, the reason I wrote I'm Gandhi is because we're a culture at war right now. We're a culture that has stopped listening to each other. So this is the book I wrote to remind my own kids and parents out there that no one wins in a fight. And the reason Dr. King worked the way he did, and the reason Gandhi worked the way they did, is, you know, Gandhi called it. He had a philosophy behind it. It wasn't just I'm pissed at something and I want to take action. He had something called Satyagraha, which translated meant his truth force. Now, I love this idea, a truth force. And his truth force was made up of three parts. You can learn from it: civil disobedience, non-possession, which is why he wore a cloth. You don't need big fancy things. You don't need to be rich and show off. And the most important to me, nonviolence, which he called love, and Dr. King called love. And that's what they're spreading. That's what they're teaching. And what we're seeing now in the culture is, you know, I actually don't think it's about, I think what started as, you know, about race, and what started as what may have been something about the flag, personally, I believe has been transformed in the last week, that the protest is about one man and it's about the president.
Yes.
That's what the protest is about now. Okay. It started one way. It started with Kaepernick. But the reason Jerry Jones is kneeling, and the reason Dale Earnhardt Jr. is saying you should allow to take a knee, and the reason you're seeing, you know, many conservatives now coming out, is because it's not about It's not about the flag. It's not about the anthem. It's basically trying, you know, they're fed up with a man who's saying, I don't want you to protest. And that's going to make people really upset. And that's what, you know, I think what we're seeing is a transformation of what the protest is.
Have we already lost the Western culture when people look at, I mean, the Western culture, and especially America, but the Western culture as America has always projected it, is that the good guys win, the humble guy wins, the quiet one who is never picking a fight, only comes to the fight when they absolutely have to, and the peacemaker is the blessed one. When our culture rejects now the peacemaker and says, I need a strong man to go punch them in the face, have we already lost?
We have a problem. Yeah, we have a problem, right? I mean, that's what, you know, I wrote that when I started this children's book, I Am Gandhi, I had no idea where the culture would be. I started this a year ago. And I can tell you that what it's all about and celebrates is that idea of the peacemaker. We've gotten away from it. And we automatically lose when we're fighting. You know, my favorite line in the whole book, it says, I need to read it to you, but it literally says that, you know, Gandhi was the small one, the skinny one, the poor one, even the shy one, but he was never the weak one. And here's the line. It says, strength doesn't come from the size of your body. It comes from the size of your heart. Show love, especially when you want to fight unfairness. And to me, I need my kids to learn that. That's what I Am Gandhi is about. And one of the things that I love about when I was researching Gandhi, again, a footnote of history that I know you'll appreciate, is, of course, we know it's a peaceful protest. He's fasting and he's marching. But my favorite thing he does, and I never knew this story, is one of his greatest adversaries was a guy named General Smuts. And General Smuts is the one who had Gandhi arrested and put him in prison and always tried to keep him down. It was literally like his arch nemesis.
The name sounds like a cartoon.
Smuts
is like, yeah, you are in a comic book.
Right. He's literally got the twirly mustache and laser sharp.
Right.
He's got everything, right? And this guy, at one point, Gandhi makes a pair. He used to make things, you know, he made a pair of leather sandals. And he gives it to his arch nemesis, General Smuts. And he says, why are you giving me this? And he says, I made them as a sign of friendship. Better to make friends than to make enemies. And the great part of the story, my kids were fascinated when they read this to them. But the best part of the story is that he wears them for 20 years, the general does. And 20 years later, he gives them back to Gandhi. And Gandhi says, why are you giving them back? And he says, because I wasn't worthy of wearing the gift in the shoes of such a great man.
Wow.
And I love that at the height of all of his anger, and especially, you know, we all on both sides right now are at the height of our anger. Whatever side you're on, you're at the height of your anger. And the one thing I try to do every day is, and I say it all the time, I put this on my Twitter feed and Facebook feed, we need to be better than what angers you. Be better than what angers you. It is vital.
Brad Meltzer, author of the book I Am Gandhi for Kids and I Am Sacagawea. There's a whole series of I Am books for kids. Let me take this a different direction on Gandhi. Right now, we are talking about pulling down statues of Thomas Jefferson, who, yes, was a slave owner. Yes, was a deeply conflicted man, but was also one of the greatest men to live in his day and freed much of the world with his thoughts. We're talking about pulling statues down, and it's because we're judging them and saying, yeah, well, everything else we have to dismiss. Brad, Gandhi was one of the biggest racists against blacks out there. The things that he said, and he was just blind to it. He was blind to it. He goes to Africa, and he does not see that the way blacks are being treated in Africa is the way his people are being treated in India. He doesn't equate that at all. But that doesn't mean we dismiss the great things about him.
Yeah, you, of course. And same about, of course, one of my heroes, Thomas Jefferson, you know, our mutual love for him. And to me, it comes down to this. Is if, you know, when I started writing this series and people said, and one of the first people I did, you know, was George Washington. And people said, well, you know, slave owner, this, that. And I said, listen, if you are looking for someone who's perfect, you're not looking at a human being. The only one who's perfect is God, period. Okay, that's it. Anyone else you give me, I will find a flaw in. And some are going to be bigger than others, and some will be personal, and some will be adulterous, and some will be slavery, and some will, you'll find something. The Gandhi one actually is the only hero so far who gave me the refute for it, because Gandhi himself says, I'm not perfect. I have a bad, his thing was a temper at the time. Forget about it, everything else that came out. But one of the things he says, and it's the most vital lesson I put in the book for my own children, and I need the lesson every day. I need it. But he says that the only way that you change the world is you first have to change yourself. And he knows even about his own temper. If he transforms himself, he'll be the best person he can be. That's the only way you change the world. You change yourself. And I think that I take that philosophy, and that's how I apply it to my own life. If you're looking for perfect people, you're tearing down statues. There will be no statues left. We will be in the statueless land, right? You can't find the perfection. And to me, that's obviously, you know, losing that history. You and I don't even have to discuss it. What a travesty that is. But I think what we have to do is, again, rather than find anger, is find the forgiveness in people too. You have to find, if you're looking for those things, you have to say, you know what, I can't be mad at everything, because as you said so well, then we've already lost the fight. If you approach the argument in anger, you've already lost.
Brad, thanks.
This whole series from Brad Meltzer is a great one. Read these books to my kids. And where else are you going to find any stories about the footwear of General Schmutz?
You're not going to. You're not. I've looked. No. The sandals of Schmutz, I can't find them.
Yeah, the books are I Am Gandhi, I Am Sacagawea. There's a whole series of these for your kids. They're great. You can go to get them at bookstores or bradmeltzer.com.
I could have him on all the time.
Yeah, he's just so,
he's fantastic.
So good.
I love his love for history. If you're a gun owner, can you say with 100% confidence that your family and your home are safe?
I am a gun owner, and no, I cannot say that.
Okay. Have you, remember when we went through the classes and we thought, okay, we've got to make sure we know when to pull a gun and how to pull a gun and how to fire a gun. Remember all that stuff?
Yeah, for the concealed carry license, yeah.
Did we ever even consider, I didn't, did we ever consider what happens the second after you pull the trigger?
It's a scary time. It gets, I mean, because all you think about is that moment.
Right.
Am I going to do the right thing?
Right.
And then after that, you're going to face a very long time of trying to put your life back together.
Others saying, and especially no matter, yeah. Depending on where you live, a district attorney is going to be trying to ask that question and trying to prove to everyone else that you should not have had a gun and you should not have pulled the trigger. You're going to be beating yourself up. And meanwhile, then you're going to be in court. Your life is going to change probably for about a 3-year period. And you'll be broke by the end of it. That doesn't sound good. Is your family safe? You might have been safe from the guy who came in to rob or worse in your house. But now you've got a whole different defense that you have to worry about. That's where the U.S. Concealed Carry Association comes in. They now have the Concealed Carry Family Defense Guide from the association. It's 100% free. In it, you're going to find out all kinds of different things, like, you know, how to survive a mass shooting, the safest and most dangerous places to sit when you're out in public, how to responsibly own and store a gun, and to me, the most important thing is, what happens after you pull the trigger? What happens? Now, this 164-page guide is absolutely free. You can get it for free, or you can download the audiobook. That's also free for a limited time. You're also going to get a bonus home defense checklist. I urge you to go now to protectanddefend.com. Get the instant access to all this free stuff, but also check into the insurance, because this is what they do. They're the ones who, when you pull the trigger, your first call goes to the police. Your second call goes to the USCCA. They will find the right attorney in your area. They're going to their insurance, you know, works out the costs with you. So you're not alone. Somebody is there to protect the protector. Defend the defender. Protectanddefend.com. Go there now. Protectanddefend.com.
Glenn Beck.
No, you don't know. No one knows.
Glenn Beck.
I don't know what a prototype wall is. The wall prototype construction begins today.
Yeah, you got to figure out how to build it first. You got to figure out what the wall is. Like,
put a
what
couple
is
studs is there, and then you throw some sheetrock up, and you got yourself a wall.
No one's built a wall before,
right?
So the idea is to try to figure out how to build a wall.
Seriously, what is the wall prototype construction that is beginning?
Well, I mean,
today,
there are obviously details, different ways you could build it.
Right.
So I guess they're going to try to finalize that before they build the entire thing. Which they're not, they've already stated they're not going to build. We should point that out. They are not going to build a wall on the entire border as stated already by the government.
So America needs hope. And where do we find it? We find it in a foreigner. We find it in Bono. What he just said to his crowd a couple of nights ago in San Diego is fantastic. We'll share that coming up.
Glenn Beck. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
All right, it's time for a quick quiz. Now, this is not, if you have Common Core, this may be hard. Is 60,000 greater than, less than, or equal to 100? Think about it. 60,000 greater than, less than, or equal to 100. Now, if you're in the media, I know you answered equal to. But that's only because you really want us to believe that 60,000 emails from Hillary Clinton's private server, over half of which were deleted, are the same thing as less than 100 emails found in the private email address of Jared Kushner. Now, you might still think to yourself, well, did Jared Kushner, did he miss the whole email scandal during the election? Why is he using private email address? That's a really fair question. It is. But perspective is important. Not opinion, perspective. First of all, no one is accusing Kushner of emailing classified documents. That's a pretty big part of it. I mean, really, I don't really care if she had a bunch of stuff on her own server that was about, you know, grandma's toenails. I don't care. Classified information. He didn't also call up some IT professional to set up a private server in his home. He already had that private server. It was a family domain account. And reportedly, now this is something we don't know, it hasn't been verified, but reportedly the emails were nothing but a bunch of links to news stories, mostly sent to him by other people that he then forwarded to his government address to fulfill the federal record keeping laws. So unlike Hillary, he put them back into the system. He wasn't trying to get them out. He had a private server. Somebody emailed him something about the campaign, usually just news stories. He immediately sent them to the government address so it would all be there. Now, this information has not been verified yet, and we still may find something wrong. I don't know. But at this point, we don't have the weird emails about grandma's yoga, John Podesta wearing socks to bed, creepy codes about child trafficking rings held in a non-existent basement of a pizza parlor. So far, there's nothing here at all, which makes the equation, I think, a lot easier to solve. 60,000 is not even close to equal to 100. The math couldn't be more simple. Unless you learned mathematics with Common Core, or more likely, you're in the media.
It's Tuesday, September 26th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So what matters most today? What matters most? There's a lot of stuff that matters, matters a lot. But to me, what matters most is trying to find ways to feel good about ourselves. But base it not on, you know, I feel better because I just had a bowl of M&Ms. Yeah, you're going to feel crappy after that. Once you finish it, you're going to feel crappy. Something that's real And we have lost perspective. Sometimes you get so close to something, you're like, it's a blue dot. It's just a blue dot and a green dot and a red dot. Back up. Back up. Gain some perspective. You're too close. It's a Seurat painting. It's a painting of a park in Paris.
Oh.
And right now, Americans are too close, and all we're seeing are blue dots, red dots, green dots. We cannot see, we don't have perspective at all on who we are. And everything is, everything, you know, we didn't talk about this yesterday. I mentioned it, let me mention it again, but we should talk about it. Did you see what Facebook said about how they missed some of the influence advertising from Russia? Did you see this?
No.
So, what's his name running for president? So.
He's not running for president yet, at least. Mark Zuckerberg?
Yeah, Zuckerberg. So Zuckerberg says, you know, one of the things that we missed was they were setting up a lot of advertising for Black Lives Matter. Isn't that interesting?
They were setting it up for Black Lives Matter?
Russia was paying for ads for Black Lives Matter. Isn't that interesting?
It is interesting.
That doesn't really seem to go along with Hillary Clinton. We want her out. We want Donald Trump in, does it?
No. What was the explanation?
There was no explanation other than that's one of the reasons why they missed it.
So they think it was they were covering themselves, like trying to send them off the trail?
No. No. They only want chaos. They only want us to rip each other apart. Do I think that Vladimir Putin would have liked to see Hillary Clinton win? No. Does that make him for Donald Trump? No. I think what Vladimir Putin really wants is chaos in the West and chaos in America. He knows that Abraham Lincoln was right. If there's ever going to be a revolution, if we're ever going to kill, if America's ever going to die, it's going to die by our own hand. It's going to be suicide because we'll just tear each other apart. And so that's what they're doing. They are doing everything they can to push every single button to tear us apart. And we're gladly going right along with it. As we're watching, do you think Vladimir Putin and our enemies, any enemy of America, do you think they're not licking their chops when they see what we're doing this week just with the NFL? They're laughing. This is great for them. Kim Jong-un, this is great for him. Because we're destroying ourselves. Because the thing that we always had was unity. America is, I guess I'm the quintessential American because this is really the way I feel about me. I'll get it right, but only after I've exhausted every other possible opportunity. Eventually I'll get it right. That's America. We'll get it right, but only after we've tried everything else. But we do get it right. And we come together. When push comes to shove, we come together, and when we do, we change the world. That's why we have to remain divided. And there are people on all sides that want us to be divided. Because once we say, you guys, both of you, knock it off. See, the children, and if you have children, you know this. The children know if they can divide mom and dad, they win. They win. And that's why it's critical as parents, if you're a new parent, you need to have a talk with your spouse and say, we're never going to be divided. I don't care. I don't care if you've just told the children, we're going to go out on a killing spree tonight. When they come to me and say, mom said we're going on a killing spree, I'm going to respond to them, you damn right we are. Then I'm going to come to you away from the kids and I'm going to, what the hell are you talking about with the killing spree? We're not doing a killing spree. But as far as the kids know, I am all in on the killing spree. Kids understand, divide mom and dad and we win. They're toast. Breaks up the family. The kids in our society. they know this too. And that is why, that's why you feel like looking at people on both sides and just say things like, grow up. Because they're behaving like kids. And they are trying to appeal to either mom or dad. It's why the adults, even though we disagree, I'm not going on a killing spree with you. Yes, we are, kids. I mean, yes, we are, kids. The adults will have a reasonable conversation. But we have to be united. And because we are letting our emotions, we are letting our fear and our anger drive us, we are becoming part of the problem. And it's because we feel as though we're under attack in every aspect of our life. We feel as though my kids are under attack. The culture is under attack. My job is under attack. My finances are under attack. My church is under attack. My faith is under attack. Everything. Everything that I am. I'm constantly under attack. And as long as people can make you feel that way, they can control you. But once in a while, somebody can come from overseas, somebody who has perspective because it's not their family. And they can remind the family exactly who they are. Bono just did this in San Diego. I just got an email from the editor of 180.com. And he said, happened to be at a concert with my wife in San Diego. You need to hear this. This is Bono on stage in San Diego just a couple of days ago. Listen.
The country that we love, country that has become our second home. And you've been so generous to our band. And we don't take that for granted. We really love this country. And we love you. And it's not just a country, is it? It's an idea. It's a great idea. It's one of the best ideas ever, is it not, Edge? America. But if we're honest, that idea right now is in need of some encouragement, some protection. A country built on hope cannot be driven by fear. A country founded on equality cannot allow hate to pull it apart. Is that not true?
Founded on equality.
We all have a stake in your success. We want the city on the hill to shine. We all have a responsibility to work for that promise. Because there is nothing this country cannot do when you work together as one.
Great message.
He believes it too.
Great message. That's what makes it good.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. It's from the U2 tour, which is fantastic, by the way. I saw it when it was in Dallas, and he did a similar thing there. I think that was after the time after the shooting, and he was like talking about how we really need to honor, like, you know, Steve Scalise and the service he's put into the guy. It was like, you never hear a band do this, right? That's not what happens. But he was praying for Steve Scalise's recovery. I mean, it's fantastic. And he legitimately believes America is a great place and believes in the founding ideas of this country, even though you don't agree with him politically on everything.
When was the last time you heard somebody say a country that was founded on equality cannot be ruled by hate?
That's amazing because you don't hear that it's founded on equality very often.
No, never.
And obviously there were major flaws in that, but it's just like we had heard earlier with Brad Meltzer. It's like there's flaws in everybody. You know, this country has never been perfectly executed.
It's like looking at a Model T and saying Henry Ford was an imbecile. He was an imbecile. Because look at the Model T. The Model T was an idea. It was an idea. Man doesn't have to use a horse. What it turns into is up to the future generations. Yes, it didn't have airbags. I can't believe he wanted people to die. It didn't have airbags. They didn't think of it that way at that time.
They did the best they could. And I and honestly, like, if you wanted something that actually can rejuvenate, you forget sometimes that we live in a great place. And you watch the news with all the kneeling and everyone fighting about it and all the division. Stuff like that really does bring you to like a cool place. You can see the video. I guess we're going to have it up on glenbeck.com or 180report.com is where it was submitted from. But it's Bono does this a lot. And I think because he's a celebrity and because he occasionally says things that are liberal or things you might not agree with, people brush him off and throw him into that same sort of pile of annoying celebrities. In reality, the guy freaking loves this country. And he's been consistent about that for a very long time.
Somebody asked me the other day, if you could interview one person, who would it be? And I said, Elon Musk.
Really?
But I think it might be Bono. If I could interview one person, it might be Bono. Elon Musk, for sure. But just ahead of him, maybe Bono. Because he has experience on both sides. And he sees it. He has grown and seen it. And seen it work and fail from both sides.
He has incredible perspective. And he's a great interview. The guy, he's got a way with words. Elon would be interesting, too, because he's so connected to what's coming in the future.
Yeah, I heard a quote from him. I watched an interview with him over the weekend, and I heard a quote from Elon Musk, and he said, they said, why are you doing this? Why are you doing all these things, and why are you going to Mars and everything else? And he said, because I want to be able to think of the future and be happy. That amazing?
Yeah.
I want to be able to think. I know it's
he's
really
pretty
dark.
Pessimistic dude.
Yeah, no, he's a pessimistic dude. But I thought that was really interesting. I want to be able to look at the future and be happy. Every successful business has great talent. But where do you find your great talent? Where do you find the people that are going to take your business to the next level? The answer is ZipRecruiter. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter isn't really a job site. What ZipRecruiter does is it goes out and finds the qualified candidates. It doesn't require the candidates to find you. 80% of the employers who post a job at ZipRecruiter receive a quality candidate to the site by the end of day one. So posting your job opening to 100 plus job sites, you can do that on your own, or you can just do it with one click. And then there's no juggling emails, no juggling of the phone calls to your office. You just screen them, you rate them, you manage them all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy to use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates. Find the talent that you need and get immediate results. Right now, you can post your job at ZipRecruiter for free. It's absolutely free. Just go right now to give it a whirl and try it out. ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Beck.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
So, we were just talking about Elon Musk. I watched an interview with him on TED Talks, and it was about 45 minutes long, and he talked about going to Mars, he talked about building rockets, he talked about the new tunnel program that he's working on, his Hyperlink. I mean, he's remarkable. And the things that come out of his mouth that are like, we intend on, doubling the battery capability in the next 5 years. And he just says it so matter-of-factly and like, yeah, that's what we're going to do. It's remarkable. And he'd sound insane if he hadn't have, you know, but for instance, he said, the question was, we understand that you want to, in the next 10 years, launch a rocket to Mars. And he said, Yeah, well, our internal goals are much more aggressive. We'd like to try to do it in 5.
Okay.
Yeah, I get that. All right. Mm-hmm. And you accept it from him. Mm-hmm. But he is, the reason why he's pushing for Mars is because he's really concerned about what's happening with AI.
He really is. And I'm, of course, I don't like the idea he's always calling for regulation on this stuff, but I mean, at least he's thinking about it. Here he is talking about AI.
On the artificial intelligence front, you know, I have exposure to the very most cutting edge AI, and I think people should be really concerned about it. I keep sounding the alarm bell, but you know, until people see like robots going down the street killing people, like they don't know how to react, you know, because it seems so ethereal. I think we should be really concerned about AI, and I think we should. AI is a rare case where I think we need to be proactive in regulation instead of reactive. Because I think by the time we are reactive in AI regulation, it's too late. Because what's going to happen is robots will be able to do everything better than us. I'm including all of us, you know.
Glenn Beck.
So, if you saw the Dallas Cowboys last night, it was the perfect ending. I mean, it was beautifully done. It was a great ending for this whole thing. They walk out, and first they all take a knee right in the center of the field. And some of them are praying. Some of them are not praying, I suppose. And then they get up, and they lock arms, and they stand to the side, and they listen to the national anthem with respect. Everybody's a winner. You've got the prayer thing. You have the taking of a knee. You have the national anthem. You have respect. And the best part is we can now watch football.
It was brilliant if it ended there, but it's not going to. They've already decided for next week, the Cowboys are going to stand for the anthem. They're going to take a knee for the entire first quarter. And then they're going to lay down in a pool of gravy at halftime.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
For unity.
Wow.
For unity. The Green Bay Packers, on the other hand, they believe that locking arms just wasn't enough of a unifying gesture last week.
Mm-hmm.
So they're now going to lock lips during the national anthem.
Well,
and some have promised tongue.
Wow.
For unity.
And fluidity.
This is not some kind
and
of...
fluidity.
And fluidity.
Yes.
And then during the kickoff, the Indianapolis Colts are all planning to vomit at the same time. For unity.
Wow.
For unity.
Why?
Because
if one wants to vomit,
they should all vomit, right?
Yes.
There's a sports psychologist I saw this morning who says it's one of the most sincere forms of unity you can do to synchronize barf.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
He said synchronized barfing is the most unifying gesture in all of sports.
So when my wife or I go into the bathroom with my daughters and we're holding their hair back as they're vomiting.
You guys are unifying.
I'm not barfing.
Oh, okay. Well, then
I'm not
you should
barfing.
Barf, too.
You should throw up.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yes. Now I've almost done that.
I know.
While I have helped my children.
I've seen entire classrooms of fourth graders do that. 30 kids all heaving.
One starts to barf, and it's a chain reaction. So I'm not sure the barfing is the unifier that you think it is.
According to sports psychologists,
okay.
Who am I? I'm
all
not
right.
a psychologist.
All right, okay.
The thing that bothered me the most about the weekend, I think, was the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Baltimore Ravens in London taking a knee during the national anthem, but standing for God Save the Queen?
It's bizarre.
Hey, rocket scientists, do you know that Britain started the slave trade in the United States of America? And for Baltimore Ravens, the British almost burned your city to the ground at one point? Hello? It's just stupid.
Every once in a while, I get this weird impression that some of these athletes have not fully researched these issues. It's possible.
No, come on.
I think that's kind of hasty.
You're being a little unfair
really?
There.
Yeah, okay.
I think you are.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that. I feel like maybe the entire... history of the United States, and maybe every piece of the FBI Unified Crime Report has not necessarily been
They're busy playing football.
Covered a cover.
Yeah, right, they're playing football. They got the executive summer. They got the high points. America's a country.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
FBI.
Bad.
And it's bad. They got that.
They got that.
Yeah.
That's, what more do you need?
Yeah, they got that.
That might have been an ad lib on their part.
Yeah, that's
I
not
mean,
a, that's
I think
not
they got America is a country, and then they just fill in the rest.
It's bad.
Because the FBI, would a good country require a law enforcement agency?
No, it would not.
No.
You would need one. Right. Because they're good people.
Exactly right. So I think we can see the logic here. America is a country. It has a law enforcement organization like the FBI. Those are only used when you have bad people.
Only necessary then.
Thus, America is bad.
Right. Right.
Now let's vomit. there's something else. Do we have the audio? Because
I believe so. This is huge.
This is huge.
This is Pat Gray news.
This is really big.
This is news designed for Pat Gray.
No, I'm excited.
We are very surprised to see this announcement today. The prophecy is coming true.
Now, you are going to be shocked. This is real.
This is real.
This is real.
Okay.
Go ahead, roll the video.
Hi, everybody. Chip and Joanna Gaines here in Waco, Texas. Of course, at the farm where it all started. I remember it like it was yesterday. 5 years ago, roughly, we were contacted by a production company who wanted to do a show about us here in our beautiful hometown of Waco, Texas. And one thing led to another. And, of course, a pilot was born called Fixer Upper. And this journey has been indescribable. The opportunity of a lifetime. Our family has grown up before our eyes on national television, which is an experience that I can tell you is beautiful.
He's
I mean,
leading
wonderful,
somewhere.
Sounds like it.
For so many reasons. But nevertheless, we are making an announcement.
And it just ends there.
No.
Nevertheless.
No, we have the rest. What is he going to make the announcement? What is he going to say?
He's going to say, I mean, you're leading me to believe he's going to say they're leaving to sell facial cream.
I'm not leading you to believe anything.
This is, that's what I'm being led to believe.
I'm not leading you to believe anything.
Sounds
like a pretty serious thing, doesn't
it? Is this recent?
Yeah, this happened today.
Just moments ago.
Really?
Just moments ago.
Well, then it's got to be facial cream, right? They've just been behind the ads on the website.
Now they're ready to go. That would be the best story of all
this
time.
I listened
to this up to here, exactly like you did, and I went, okay, I'm being led to believe it's facial cream. This is actually a huge announcement. Listen.
Today, that the fifth season, which will begin in November and take us all the way into second quarter 2018, will be our last.
What?
They are actually ending
They're
the
actually
show.
They're actually ending
now,
the show.
Why? I don't, are they selling facial cream?
It's really happening. The facial cream prophecy has proven true.
It's true.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Big announcement.
I gotta leave the show with that today.
Yeah, I think so, right?
It's huge.
This is a Pat Gray Unleashed story.
Yes,
I will
it is.
Tell you, if I were, what is it, HGTV? That's they're on. I would have paid them anything because
to stay.
They are the best. They're the reason why
they're the superstars of the network.
Imagine how good the facial cream must be. Incredible. Pat Gray Unleashed coming up on the Blaze Radio and TV Network next, and subscribe on iTunes and make him number one.
Every successful business has great talent. Where do you find that great talent to take your business over up to the next level? ZipRecruiter. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter does a great job and will help you find that qualified candidate. Try them out for free. I also want to tell you a little bit about American Financing. American Financing will help you put together the financing for your home. And when I say they help you, they are not working for the bank. What they are doing is they're working for you. When people say, I hope the bank gives me a loan, they're not giving it to you. They're selling it. Have you seen how much you're paying to borrow that money? They're selling it to you. And there are different what are called loan instruments. The banks are pushing because they want to be able to get a higher rate from you. They want to be able to sell this, you know, this loan instrument or this loan instrument. And so they go to all of the loan managers and say, we want you to push this one. American Financing is family owned and operated. And so they don't work that way. They don't work on commissions. And they don't work for the bank. They work for you.
This is definitely true. This literally happened to me, in which I went to American Financing. They looked for, they got me a great deal on a mortgage. I found one of, I think, the six companies that I went to that had a slightly better rate in one area because I was asking for a very weird type of mortgage.
You're going to regret that, but go ahead.
Well, thank you for that.
Yeah.
But they said, you know what? Honestly, like, we're more than happy to help you. We'd love to help you. But if you can find that rate, run to it. Take it.
Yeah, they said if they're crazy enough to give you that rate.
That is what the way they phrased
yeah, it.
It
is. They're crazy enough to give you that rate. Take that rate.
But I mean, that, again, like they're turning down business.
Because they don't make their money that way.
Yeah.
They just don't. They're not getting paid double. I mean, they want to give you the right mortgage and then you're going to buy it from them. And then they're going to have you in the next house and the next house and the next house. They earn your trust. Not a lot of people do that when you're looking for mortgages. Call their number right now, 800-906-2440, 800-906-2440, or you can go to AmericanFinancing.net. That's AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Here we would be taking a fourth hour, moving it to Facebook Live here in probably about half an hour or so. If you want to kind of join us, it's a very kind of loose behind the scenes kind of thing, but we'll do that in about a half an hour. Make sure you join us, Glenn Beck, Facebook / Glenn Beck and Facebook / The Blaze.
Maybe we can talk a little bit about the important things the New York Times has been teaching us lately about our history in this world, including how did women fare in China's communist revolution?
Ah.
I had a lot of thoughts about that before, but now I'm woke because they tell us here the communists did many terrible things, but they made women's lives much better. Which was not my, it was not what I thought before.
Really?
I've learned something new.
So wait, the communists did a lot of bad things. Did they mention any of them? Like the,
you know, they get into a little bit of that.
90 million people they slaughtered?
Well, I don't think that's the important thing to focus
okay,
on
all
here.
Right, okay, all right.
I thought the tweet the New York Times put out really crystallized the issue, which was, for all its flaws, the communist revolution taught Chinese women to dream big.
Like someday I'll be out of these shackles.
But maybe something like that.
Someday I could worship as I wanted to. Someday. I know. Teaching women to dream big. Maybe you could have two children.
Whoa, don't dream too big now.
It's not going to be a dream that comes true. They'll come and they'll rip the child out of you, kill the child, and possibly kill you. But you can dream big. Maybe two children.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
And can you get away with, for all its flausing, $60 million dead? I feel like that's more than a for all its flaws reference.
Well, I mean, you could say, yes, you could do that. You could do that. But you would also then have to accept smaller flaws, like, you know, for all of the flaws on slavery, the founding of America was good.
Right. You'd have to do that.
That.
Certainly wouldn't be tearing down statues anywhere.
No,
right
of course
now.
Not. For all of the flaws in America, it has been good for people. Mm.
For all of its flaws, the fire that burned their house to the ground gave off some much-needed warmth in that cool fall air.
That's true. It is true.
Yeah, for all of its flaws, the thickness of the antifreeze he was drinking satisfied his appetite momentarily.
That is, again, nice. That's another good one. It's another good one.
For all of its flaws, the giant meteor careening towards the Earth provided some much-needed shade on a bright summer afternoon. I think that works.
I like that.
For all of its flaws, Anthony Weiner's decision to sign up for Twitter did guarantee that Hillary Clinton would never be president. That one actually kind of works.
That one works. I like that one. Works. Yeah, that one's not really funny. That one's no, true.
It's
good.
True. It's not funny right. In any way.
For all of the flaws on that joke, it still is good. It still works.
That one actually works.
It still works.
Unless you're, I don't know, a parent of a random 15-year-old, then it's not quite as good or
yeah,
funny.
But you know what? For all of his flaws, look at the things that he taught young women.
There you go.
Right?
Think of how much.
Think how outrageous that. Think how outrageous that statement is from the New York Times. For all of its flaws, communism really has taught women to think big. Do they describe how they're thinking big?
Well, I guess, you know, look, pre-communist China was not a delightful place for women either. And there were times in the communist revolution where they had all hands on deck is the way I would describe it. They put women to work. They put, and I guess the hope of the career gave them
the
a little
hope
bit.
Hope of the career, the one where they work for Apple and throw themselves off the roof. That one.
Yeah,
that
I guess
one,
that's
good. Yeah, that's good.
Listen to this. The party at times only paid a lip service to the equal sharing of domestic labor. But in practice, it condoned women's continuing subordination in the home. Well, there's a hopeful,
wow,
dream.
Wow, dream big. Mm-hmm. Dream big. You can share the labor equally.
Right. But in posters and speeches, Glenn, female socialist icons were portrayed as iron women who labored heroically in front of steel furnaces.
Freaking believable.
While maintaining a harmonious family.
Think of this.
This is a real article.
These are killers. Yeah. These are killers. They killed 60 to 100 million people.
I mean, you're, again, what, five times the amount of Hitler? Five times? This is not a cute little story that you look back on and fondly. This is the most murderous regime in world history, period. And they're talking about them like they were inspirational, though.
You know, despite all of his flaws, he did come up with the Volkswagen.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
You could absolutely do this with Hitler. They never would.
Despite all of his flaws, the Autobahn is unbelievable. Despite all of his flaws, those were snappy uniforms.
There you go.
I mean, it's crazy.
It's incredible.
It is crazy.
And you cannot... And that's what's
and
so
especially,
amazing.
Especially since they are taking us apart and not giving us, despite all of our flaws, they're not giving us any room for that. No room. But they will for people who have killed the minimum of 60 million people.
It's amazing what you'll overlook when
it's just ideology.
Your bias is being confirmed.
Yes.
When that comes out, it makes everything a lot easier.
But it shows you also how frightening communism, socialism, fascism really is. Because when you can overlook the death of 60 million people, the orchestrated death of 60 million people, and you can say, yeah, well, I mean, you have to crack a few eggs. When you can get there... There is no depravity that will stop you currently because you believe, yes, that's bad, but that's why you have to be intellectually honest.
Glenn Beck.